Welcome to the Ask the Expert Show, sponsored by the Cardamone Law Firm for Injured Workers. Now sit back as Philadelphia's top experts in the legal, health, financial, and home improvement world educate you in the fields of workers' comp law, wealth management, family law, estate planning, pain management, and more. Call in now if you have a question for our experts at 888-329-3306. Now let's welcome our host, Steve O.
Philadelphia. I hope the weather is nice there because it sure is beautiful here in South Florida. Today is the Ask the Expert Show. We're on with you every Tuesday from 10 to 11 with some of the top experts in their field. And as we've now become, our very first show each week is with attorney Angela Giampolo. And today we're going to be talking about the LGBTQ community law as it refers to family law. Good morning,
Angela. Good morning. Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Oh my God, you have a different background today.
There's palm trees and all of the things. So the Chihuahua is still with me, but
you still got the boss.
Still got the boss, but I am in Coronado Island in San Diego.
Oh, okay. So let's tell everybody about your firm.
Sure. So Giampolo Law Group was founded in 2008. I feel like I get older and older each week. Well, I am getting older and older each week when I say that, but and it was founded really to fill a hole in legal services where I saw a lot of my friends at the time seeking out legal counsel and having to go to lawyers that either were flat out not comfortable with the fact that they were gay and they had to sort of leave that at the door upon entering if they were going for corporate stuff, real estate stuff, whatnot, or they just didn't make a safe place for the LGBTQ community, even if it had to do with adoptions or especially pre-marriage equality, the dissolution of a relationship and how you got divorced when there was no divorce law. And you had all these lawyers that were not LGBTQ and or allies, ultimately assisting the LGBTQ community. So I founded Giampolo Law Group to do just that.
Well, what you've done with your firm is amazing. And I got to tell people, I love sharing this, that you are looking to expand your educational program and try to just educate people that don't understand about the LGBTQ community. And I got to tell you, I have learned so much myself from this show, and we just want to pass that along to others.
Yeah, so it's twofold. I'm expanding both the law firm nationally, and our first expansion state will be Arizona and then down in Florida. And by March of 2022, we hope to be in at least 12 states, if not more. So minimally 12 states. So there's that piece where just the law firm itself will be expanding and will be able to help people in the LGBTQ community in a lot more states other than just Pennsylvania and New Jersey. But additionally, from the education piece, I am building out a curriculum geared towards lawyers. To literally rectify the problem that I saw 13 years ago, which will allow me to teach lawyers to want to learn specifically on how to serve the LGBTQ community. What are the practice areas that impact us the most, and what's unique about those, what's nuanced about those, and ultimately create more lawyers in more states and that are able to serve the LGBTQ community with integrity.
I think what's so amazing is you're going after not just the big metropolitan cities. You are going to sink your teeth into these southern states and Midwest states.
Well, I feel like that's where it really matters. I mean, I got my third email from different couples, but my third couple from Birmingham, Alabama. There must be nobody there. And I did a Google search. Like last week, we talked about the fact that in Houston, there's seven pages of of lawyers with an LGBTQ page on their website. They may not actually know how to serve the LGBTQ community, but they knew to throw up a webpage. In Birmingham, there's not even that. And so here they are Googling, and they've come upon me in their Google search in Philadelphia. So, and thankfully I do know someone who's licensed down there. He does live in San Francisco, but he's licensed and can help them. And so I was able to pair them up with him. But, likewise, a professor in Hawaii from University of Hawaii, and there's nobody on his island that can serve the LGBTQ community or that he feels comfortable disclosing that to. So he's actually reached out to lawyers, had meetings, and then got a vibe where he didn't feel comfortable actually disclosing anything personal and just hung up and ended the consultation. So that's someone who actually did find lawyers, thought that they would be okay, and then after the consultation didn't feel comfortable. And from Hawaii, he fell upon me. So, so yeah, it's, you know, you throw a rock and hit a gay lawyer in New York, like who cares, right? You throw a rock and you hit a gay lawyer in Seattle or San Fran. So they don't need me ultimately. You know, the folks in Birmingham or little islands or rural towns, that's who needs me.
Well, we're going to be talking about family law today, but you also do real estate law, employment law, and estate planning too.
Yeah, so real estate law came naturally. I myself own a bunch of properties in Pennsylvania, and really saw it early on as a diversification of investments, and it really parlays hugely with estate planning. So estate planning, almost everybody owns either one piece of property, if not two, but they at least, you know, own the home that they live in. So estate planning, real estate is sort of a natural extension of that. Plus, from a business development and investment side of things, I also work with developers and contractors and whatnot because I'm in that world myself personally. Employment discrimination forever, and unfortunately moving forward, that's never going to end. And then transgender name changes, that's very unique county by county, state by state. New Jersey is totally different from Pennsylvania on that. And then of course, family law, which involves adoptions as well as divorces / dissolutions.
One of the things we're gonna talk about today is adoptions. And does it vary from state to state? Because I can definitely see adoption has gotta be a huge topic within the LGBTQ community.
Absolutely, yeah. We're not forming families unless we're, you know, adopting in some at some point, whether it's from surrogacy or private adoptions or foster care. But yes, it varies greatly from state to state. Again, Pennsylvania and New Jersey are very, very different in how they handle adoptions. And the biggest piece, especially for my couples that are using known sperm donors or surrogates and whatnot, every state has a different amount of time from which the gestational mother, so the woman giving birth, and or the biological parents, if it was a known sperm donor, the putative father, a certain amount of time from which when they sign the consent, so consent to terminate their parental rights, from when they sign that consent to the day that they can appeal. So you know, have 30 days in Pennsylvania from the date that you sign that, in which that person can appeal that. And so that's a long time to wait if you're the parents and you have a child for an entire month and you're just sitting there on pins and needles. Right. You have other states that are 72 hours versus 30 days. So people tend to want to shop around for that the smallest window possible where the person can basically go back on their consent to terminate parental rights, which is huge. The other piece, which it can be different, both federal and state. So during the Trump administration, we saw a lot of pushback on LGBTQ parents being able to adopt either in foster care or through religious agencies like Catholic Family Services. We saw that go all the way up to the Supreme Court in Fulton. So there are states where, and really just federal, but if you're dealing with a religious institution, you may be discriminated against. They don't view it as that, but you know, we do. And so it varies. You have to know who you're going through, the institution that you're using, as well as the state that you're in and the state specific laws around, especially consent to terminate parental rights.
How sad would that be to fall in love with a baby and 30 days later possibly have to give it back?
And in foster care, that happens all the time. And we're talking after years. I mean, the parents who go through the foster care system to find kids are the most admirable, in my opinion, because they face that potential consequence after years of bonding with a child. And then all of a sudden, the biological parent or parents come back and say that they've recuperated from, you know, whatever it is, be it drugs or maybe they're out of prison or what have you, but they go back to court and they show that, you know, they are an upstanding citizen, that they can be a parent, and the best interest of the child is always reunification with that biological parent. And so unfortunately, in the crosshairs of that are loving parents who spent 2, 3, you know, 4 years bonding with that child. So whether it's 30 days or 4 years, it's just as traumatic ultimately when you think you have a child for the rest of your life and then that's taken away. But it's very difficult. So one of the things I like to tell clients is I will meet them where they're at, in the sense that if they want to use a known sperm donor, that's absolutely fine. We go down that process, but they're are levels of which it's safer legally, right? There are methods that are much safer legally. So unknown sperm donor in a medical facility is the safest way to go. Now, obviously that is only helpful for women. Men are still left with surrogacy, very expensive methods available to them. But for women, unknown sperm donor in a medical facility, the safest. You know, there is nobody who's going to come back and there are no parental rights to terminate because you paid for that unknown sperm, you know, basically. So, and then the next is unknown sperm donor, but not in a medical facility. So the law gives deference if a doctor actually did the insemination, because now we can prove that sperm 1, 2, 3, 4 was, you know, inseminated with Dr. So-and-so, and that there was nothing in between. So conception could not have occurred in any other way because we can prove that chain of title, if you will. If you do known sperm, unknown sperm donor, but not in a medical facility, we can't necessarily prove that something else didn't occur, right? Because it left the facility, it left the cryobank, but didn't actually have a physician do the IUI or whatnot. So, and then when we get into the known sperm donor, that's when it gets dicier. I don't want to say dangerous, but definitely dicier, where we need the termination of parental rights petition and we need those consents signed and everybody still needs to be in agreement 9 months later after the baby's born. So as you go, it gets dicier and dicier.
Well, you know, I don't understand with all the foster kids out there. And there's a lot, I mean, all different age groups. Is that hard to adopt a foster child?
It's on the board of the National Adoption Center, which is actually headquartered in Philadelphia. Despite being nationwide, it was founded in Philly. And they specifically deal with foster kids. And the tagline is, there are no unwanted children, there are only unfound families. And that really, I loved that from the get-go. And what a lot of people don't realize is in Philadelphia, so the nationwide statistic is 40%, but 47% of kids in foster care are LGBTQ.
Wow.
So let that land. 47% of children in foster care are LGBTQ. And identify as such. And nationwide, 40% of kids in foster care are LGBTQ. And that's because they were kicked out for you know, being gay, trans, you know, basically for coming out. And so then they get disowned, they get kicked out, become homeless, and ultimately end up in the foster care system. And so one of the things that I worked on the board was doing parent cafes, where we took LGBTQ parents and who had adopted through the foster care system, and then LGBTQ parents that were interested in adopting through the foster care system, and put them together in a meeting, a panel, and have the parents who have gone through it talk about it, and then have all the prospective parents ask whatever questions that they had. So it's, to answer your direct question, is it hard to adopt through the foster care system? It is not. You have to go through a process of getting cleared as being a safe foster care parent, from the clearances to a home study and other things. But once you get certified to be able to adopt through the foster care system, then it just becomes about matching you and going to prospective parent events, and which obviously during COVID went away. So foster care adoptions went down greatly because we weren't able to put the kids and the prospective parents together. But so no, it's not difficult. And from an LGBTQ perspective, very rewarding, because I know that if I were to adopt through the foster care system, I would absolutely adopt an LGBTQ child, like a 7-year-old or 11-year-old. And my dream is to just adopt 5 17-year-olds right before they age out of foster care, and let them know, listen, I'm not mom. You know, you don't have to come home for Christmas if you don't want. I'm adopting you right before you age out of foster care, so you don't end up on the streets, because there's nowhere to go at 18, ultimately. So these kids, right, after 17 have a whole new set of issues at 18. So I want to adopt 5 17-year-olds and give them a place to call home if they want it, but ultimately save them from the next, you know, difficulty, which is 18 to 24.
And to tell people how they can reach you at your office.
215-645-2415.
We're going to go to break right now. When we come back, we'll have more with attorney Angela Giampolo. We'll be right back.
Giampolo Law Group is so passionate about estate planning, they went so far as to trademark, "Where there's a will, there's a way." A properly structured trust will avoid putting your loved ones through the expensive, lengthy, and emotionally draining court probate process. Most important, you can prevent some or all of your assets from being subject to estate law upon your death, allowing more of your estate to be enjoyed by your loved ones. The marriage equality ruling drastically changed the legal landscape for LGBTQ couples, and Giampolo Law Group is experienced with what those changes mean for estate planning. Giampolo Law Group can help you establish or reorganize your estate plan to address your concerns while accounting for the complexities in state and federal laws. The attorneys at Giampolo Law Group are experienced in assisting clients with estate planning, specifically in preparing or revising wills, trusts, and the other ancillary documents, such as powers of attorney and hospital visitation forms. Contact Giampolo Law Group today for a complimentary consultation. 215-398-6579. Remember, where there's a will, there's a way. You're listening to the Ask the Expert Show, sponsored by the Cardamone Law Firm for Injured Workers. Now here's your host, Steve O, and his expert guest.
And we are back. This is the Ask the Expert Show. We're with you every Tuesday from 10 to 11 with top experts in their field, health, legal, financial, and home improvement. Today, we're talking to attorney Angela Giampolo, and we are talking about the LGBTQ community. Today, we're concentrating on family law, actually adoptions. And Angela, I was wondering, what if a spouse or a partner already has a child? How does the other partner adopt them, or can they adopt them?
So they can adopt them ultimately in that situation. So you meet someone and they have a 12-year-old, right? They already have, so in this case, we'll make them a lesbian couple. So there's another putative parent out there, right? There's already that 12-year-old either has a biological father, mother, you know, through adoption, what have you. So the government wants their for every child to have at least two parents, ultimately. And that's like the goal of the government. They'd never want to prevent people from, or children rather, from having two parents. And so if you meet someone who has a 12-year-old or another child, I don't know why I'm making it 12, but if they have another child, then you, that other parent, the parent before you met your partner, would have to agree to terminate their parental rights. Instead of adding a, you know, you can't add a third person to the birth certificate here in Pennsylvania. We're working on that because, again, the goal of the state should be to have as many parents as possible for a child. But and there are other states that are working on that, New York, California, whatnot. But a lot of my clients that come to me, the original, that other parent, tends to be an absent parent or an abandoned parent or not around. And so you can go through the adoption process. And if that person is willing to terminate their parental rights, or you can force, like you can actually sue and attempt to terminate someone's parental rights. The other way is, and I've had a couple of clients do this, where a lesbian couple comes to me, or a lesbian rather, comes to me where she was in a long-term relationship with another woman, had a child together, but they never did the second parent adoption back then. So unknown sperm donor. So there is no parental right to terminate ultimately. And there's only one person on the birth certificate, that gestational mother who gave birth. And so then years later, the child was 26 when we did the second parent adoption. And so she finally, when the child is old enough to consent, you don't need, you know, so in this case, the two women were estranged from one another, and the one didn't want the other one to be able to adopt. But as the child got older and identified this person as mom, just like the other mom, they could make their own decision on that. And they absolutely wanted the person to adopt them. So at 26 years old, we did a second parent adoption. And it was really cute. I brought a onesie to court and the book, you know, Oh, the Places You'll Go. And we treated it like a baby adoption. And then we all went out to dinner and drinks afterwards. So there are multiple variations of how that can look. But yes, if you can adopt a 31-year-old, you know, another situation that I had was a child out of foster care, exactly like what I described, but met the person at 21, 22, 23, something around there, and took him under his wing and ultimately ended up adopting them to just provide that legal relationship and that structure. So it can look a lot of different ways.
I hope I get this right. Is there an agreement, a co-parenting agreement?
So I recommend having co-parenting agreements, just like I recommend having prenups when people are getting married. That ultimately, if a relationship ends and you can't agree on what to do regarding custody, ultimately, then you're going to end up in court over custody. And then that's what we see really hurt children over time, is that battle over, you know, who is going to have the child when, and what the sharing of weeks and weekends and holidays and all of the things. So a parenting plan is just like a prenup. It's something that you come up with prior, you know, while you're very much lovey-dovey in the relationship and there's no thought that the relationship will ever end. But should it end, and while we're rational human beings, this is what we think would be in the best interest of the child. Because honestly, there would be no custody fights if people, you know, could put the best interests of the child. Obviously, you know, any abusive and drug and alcohol issues aside, when one parent, you know, has those problems, and obviously you need to fight for custody for the best interests of the child. But a lot of times, it's really the divorce piece and the acrimony within the relationship that is causing the custody issues. So a parenting plan is something that you come up with. It literally talks about everything that you can imagine that has to do with parenting, from you know, like I said, down to holidays and weekends, pick up time, right? Is it 4 p.m. every Wednesday? Is it 3 p.m.? If you're going to be late, do you call or do you text? It's literally, it assumes that in the future, you will absolutely hate each other and not want to talk ever. And so if you're unable to speak ever to one another, this document should be able to literally map out everything having to do with how to parent the kids without you ever having to speak again. So down to whether you text or call if you're going to be 5 minutes late, that's all pre-written. I think they're fabulous, you know, and super, super helpful. And I've seen clients do it, and 7 years later when they need it, be over the moon about it, that they didn't have to come up with those decisions, you know, 7 years later.
Is it hard to find an LGBTQ friendly adoption agency? There can't be a lot of them.
Totally. I mentioned the National Adoption Center. Look them up. I believe it's adoption.org. They bought it in the 70s, when a long time ago, I guess before Al Gore invented the internet. I don't know when they got it, but they got it.
You had to put
couldn't
that
have been
in
the
there.
70s, but they got it real right away. And so anyways, they are a watchdog. They are a national watchdog, and they have a specific arm where they oversee, they receive complaints regarding different agencies. So if you have any question as to whether the agency that you're dealing with is LGBTQ friendly, you know, reach out to the National Adoption Center, adoption.org, and they have years and years and years of research. And if you don't feel like doing the research, just contact them and say, here's where I live in the country, and I need an LGBTQ safe and friendly adoption center, and they'll give you options.
You know, if you're grandparents or parents, brothers, sisters, and you have somebody that you know you're close to that's in the LGBTQ community, I want you to write down Angela's phone number, because if you can't tell by now, she has got such a big heart for this. She knows what she's doing, and you can feel so comfortable sitting down with her. Give everybody your phone number.
Sure, 215-645-2415.
And you know, it's like I said, she is going to be going into other states. You're going to go into Arizona next. But it doesn't matter if you're in you have a relative in another state, give her office a call, because she can either help you or
pair you up.
You.
Yeah, I can match you up with someone that is safe for you to go to. Absolutely.
And it's so important. And what I've learned there's a lot of attorneys out there that stick that up on their shingle. You know, we do LGBTQ, but they know nothing. It's kind of a marketing plan for them. But anyhow, Angela, thank you so much. And we will see you next week.
See you next week. Back in Philadelphia.
We're going to go to commercial, and we come back, we have our business broker show. We'll be right back.
Giampolo Law Group is so passionate about estate planning, they went so far as to trademark, where there's a will, there's a way. A properly structured trust will avoid putting your loved ones through the expensive, lengthy, and emotionally draining court probate process. Most important, you can prevent some or all of your assets from being subject to estate law upon your death, allowing more of your estate to be enjoyed by your loved ones. The marriage equality ruling drastically changed the legal landscape for LGBTQ couples, and Giampolo Law Group is experienced with what those changes mean for estate planning. Giampolo Law Group can help you establish or reorganize your estate plan to address your concerns while accounting for the complexities in state and federal laws. The attorneys at Giampolo Law Group are experienced in assisting clients with estate planning, specifically in preparing or revising wills, trusts, and the other ancillary documents, such as powers of attorney and hospital visitation forms. Contact Giampolo Law Group today for a complimentary consultation. 215-398-6579. Remember, where there's a will, there's a way. You're listening to the Ask the Expert Show, sponsored by the Cardamone Law Firm for Injured Workers. Now here's your host, Steve O, and his expert guest.
We're on every Tuesday from 10 to 11 on 860 AM. It's a Beasley station, which we are also on in their stations in Tampa and South Florida and Atlanta. And we have a new guest today, a new expert today. And I got to tell you, whenever I hear this name, I always want to go, Blaney. Let me say good morning to our expert, PhD. I'll have to ask him about that. Bernie Siegel with Murphy Business Sales. Good morning, Bernie.
Good morning, and Barney is okay.
Well, I got to tell you, this is the first time you're in studio today. This is the first time we've had our expert in studio, and I'm Zooming in, and I think everything's going to go wonderful. I'm so glad that you're part of the Ask the Expert show. Tell everybody about yourself and your business.
Well, I've been a business broker since 1983, independent till about 7-8 years ago, when I had a very close relationship with Roger Murphy. So at his request, I became their regional developer for Murphy Business Financial Services here in Eastern Pennsylvania. Also in 2002, I spun off a company that arranged business financing for business acquisitions and franchise startups nationally. And we also have an appraisal division. But I personally, as the old guy in the group, focus my energies on business brokerage because I'm very good at it and I just have a tremendous passion for it.
Well, first of all, you've been in business for a long time. Second of all, Murphy Business Brokers are known throughout America as well as the world. You're like one of the biggest.
Yes, we are. We have over 180 offices nationally, internationally.
Well, we're going to talk about buying and selling a business. And I got to tell you, for those of you, I know some of you have taken an early retirement, not that you wanted to, but you didn't agree with your company's guidelines. I'm going to try to make this so it's not political. And you want to do something, and you've got a little money put away. And, you know, you can go to a guy like Bernie that you might not have any idea what you'd like to do, but you can sit down with Bernie, and he can, you know, tell you some areas that he thinks would be good for you. When is a good time, though, to sell your business, Bernie?
Well, that's really a great question. I usually talk myself out of an engagement when I tell this to a potential seller, but I tell them that if they have a successful and sustainable business, successful and sustainable, that their smartest financial decision is don't sell the business. The reason you should be selling the business is because it's your time. It could be your time to move on with a part. You have a partnership that's not doing so comfortable, or you're ready to retire, or you'd like to take the money that you get from a closing and leverage that into a significantly larger business. But you don't sell a business thinking, well, oh, that's my smartest financial move. Okay. That said, what time or the best time to sell a business clearly is when it is growing. If you've already hit a peak and you've started to dip down for one reason or another, you're getting tired, lazy, it happens, that's not the best time. It's not going to show as well as a business that's continuously growing. By the way, there's also interesting times of year to expect activity in selling a business. The second biggest blip of the year of activity comes in September. And I call that the back from the shore syndrome. People have put off making a major decision like packaging their business for sale or looking to buy a business. And they put that off because they wanted to enjoy the summer with the family. The biggest blip of activity comes about the second week in January, not right after New Year's, but that second weekend when you've already finally gotten rid of the Christmas tree. And now you're thinking about that New Year's resolution you made about, darn it, this was the year I'm going to retire, or darn it, this is the year I'm going to tell my boss to pack it and I'm going to go buy my own business. So those are times of the year that we see very strong activity.
Bernie, how do you deal with a person who started their business and it's almost like their child, it's their baby, and they've had it for 20 or 25 years, and because of they started it, they feel like it's worth a lot more. How do you deal with people and bring them down to reality?
Well, first answer to that question is I respect the fact that they started this business from scratch, or even if they got it from dad 25 years ago and it was doing, you know, 1/10 of what he's now doing, and he's built or she's built this business over the years. I respect what they've done. And that's the first thing that I do. The second thing is I try to see if they're open to an appraisal of the business and understanding its true value. Now, you do sometimes, and it's interesting you ask this question because this just happened last week. Someone I know, I won't go into details, obviously, this is a matter of confidentiality, but a gentleman who I know, you know, just a bit, not closely, for probably over 25 years, contacted me. He thought he was ready to sell and retire. And he sent me his information. And I will just tell you that his gross sales were in the range of $400,000. And he came to my office last Friday with a check for me to do a formal appraisal on his business. And we chatted, and I like to give a reality check to people. And someone had told him that his business was worth, I swear to God, I am not making this up, $6
million. $6
million? $6 million for a business grossing
$400,000.
Uh-oh. Okay. And basically, I gave him a quick ballpark range, and I said, look, you're not going to be comfortable with the ballpark. I can't take your check. I can't do an appraisal for someone who's expecting a result that's just not going to happen. So sometimes you just have to give people when they're really off the, you know, off the boat, misunderstanding a value of their business. You know, sometimes I use humor. I can't help myself. I always seem to like to use humor. And I would tell them, well, who told you your business was worth $6 million? Well, my accountant. I said, look, go back to your accountant and tell him, I have a great idea. You said my business was worth $6 million, but I know you for 25 years. I'm going to let you have it for $4 million. I think he finally understood. And I had to, again, because I respect the fact that this is something that somebody started from scratch, his idea, built it over 25 years. It was very important to him and very important to his clients and customers. So I respected very much the fact that he had done that and eased him into understanding that he just has the wrong information. And if he goes back and he becomes more realistic, then we can talk. But, you know, it is what it is. And by the way, over the years, it hasn't happened a lot. Sometimes I will meet a potential seller who has an undervalue in his mind. 90%+ of the time, they've overvalued it. Okay? That's normal. But once in a while, I've had a client who wanted to put his business on the market for X, and I said, no, I can't do that. He says, what's the matter? I said, it's worth at least 1.5 times that. Oh, really? You know, so that does happen. But again, most people do who own a company either overvalue it or that's their way of negotiating. They think they're negotiating with me about the price. I don't determine the price. He doesn't determine the price. The market determines the price that a business will sell for.
We just got a text, Bernie, from a listener wanting to know, first of all, he says, I'm enjoying your show. And what is Bernie's feelings on buying a franchise?
Well, I have been in franchising one way or the other since 1975. From 1975 to 1983, my brother and I owned and operated as many as 9 Dunkin' Donuts in the Delaware Valley. And it was a different business then.
Yes.
much more physically intensive, labor intensive. We actually sold donuts. You know, last week was the Jewish holiday, Hanukkah. And just on a side note, there's many Jews have developed the habit of, since it's a deep fried and the oil is the part of the story of Hanukkah, that the Hebrew word is sufganiyot. It means jelly donuts. And jelly donuts are something that are typically eaten at Hanukkah parties. And my wife had to go to 4 Dunkin' Donut shops to find a dozen jelly donuts last week.
Wow.
Okay.
And I'm Jewish, and I've never heard of this before.
Okay.
So,
but anyway, franchising, you know, I have sold many, many franchises, almost 200 franchise resales.
So you believe in franchising.
So I believe in franchising for the right person. And I will tell you, many years ago, I wrote one of these trifold pamphlets. In fact, a couple franchisors liked it so much, they asked me to send them hundreds of copies so they could send it to all their inquiries. This is before the internet. This is when you actually called somebody or mailed them something. And the name of the pamphlet was How to Evaluate a Franchise Opportunity. And in it, I had what I called the Bernie Siegel one-question test to see if you are franchisee material. And the one-question test was, if your franchisor was rolling out a national program that you disagreed with, would you go along with it? And the answer is very telling. If your answer is, hey, no way, look, if I believe in this and I don't think this is a good use of my funds, I'm not going to spend my money on this new piece of equipment to go with what the franchisor wants, you don't belong in franchising.
Right.
Okay. In franchising, you're in business for yourself, but not by yourself. And you're either part of the team. In fact, the smartest thing to do is, as soon as the franchisor says, this is our national program, raise your hand high and say, I'm in. Okay? Be one of the good guys. I believe in franchising, again, for the right people. And I've put people into franchises who today are seriously very much multi-millionaires, because franchising, if you own one of something, you can own 10 of something. You can own 100 of something. Okay? Your growth strategy is built in to being part of a franchise system. So franchising is not just for people. I get the more sophisticated buyer who says to me, oh, I'm way above franchising. I don't need a franchisor, you know. Well, they are the successful ones, you know, in that field today. Once a business concept, whether it's hamburgers, whether it's, you know, donuts, whether it's fixing your car, whatever
right.
It is, once an industry becomes franchised, they become the industry leaders.
Gotcha. And they've made all the mistakes. You don't have to make
exactly. Them. Yeah, and of course, you're buying as part of a large buying group. I remember one calculation I had to do for somebody. They were buying an existing franchised sign business, and they wanted me to justify to them the royalty, the percent that they have to pay to the franchisor on every sale that they make. They said, why should I pay the franchisor? I made the sale. I'm doing the work. Well, forgetting about the reason people came to you was you had that franchise name. That's right. Why you got the client in the first place. But by buying all of your vinyl strips and your the backings that you use, the substrate materials, by buying that through their national buying programs, they were saving as much as they were giving back on the franchise royalty. So, hey, yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Give everybody, we had to go to break. Give everybody your phone number.
Sure, 610-668-9780. And after the break, maybe I'll tell you what the PhD is in.
You know, it's funny. I have that down. I wanted to ask you that. We're going to go to break. We're here with Dr. Bernie Siegel with Murphy Business Sales, and we'll be right back.
Murphy Business is one of the largest and most successful business brokerage firms in North America. The King of Prussia, Pennsylvania office is one of more than 180 offices across the United States and Canada. The experienced business brokers at Murphy Business Philadelphia have extensive business experience across most types of businesses. Their firsthand experience helps to provide professional assistance whether you're looking for commercial real estate, a franchise opportunity, assistance with mergers and acquisitions, or a comprehensive business valuation. Murphy Business professionals offer assistance with all of your business brokerage needs. Bernie Siegel believes that when you're looking for and selecting a business broker, you select a broker with integrity, which can develop the kind of quality network who will seriously review opportunities he or she represents. Bernie Siegel has integrity and accepts engagements only if the expectations of the seller are within the scope of the market. The business brokers at Murphy Business Brokers have the skills and tools needed to analyze, package, market, finance, and close a transaction. This means embracing technology where it can facilitate the process, but also appreciate the tools of face-to-face negotiations and relationship building. Bernie and his staff are able to transmit to prospective buyers his strong belief in the project that he is representing, as he only accepts projects he can be enthusiastic about. His 38 years plus in the profession are marked with appreciation from his clients and recognition of his prowess by his peers. Call them today at 610-668-9780. That's 610-668-9780.
You're listening to the Ask the Expert Show, sponsored by the Cardamone Law Firm for Injured Workers. Now here's your host, Steve O, and his expert guest.
Hi, this is the Ask Expert Show. We're here with, should I call you Dr. Siegel?
Don't use it that often. It's been a while. Bernie is fine.
I got to tell you that, you know, in your commercial we just ran, that you will not take on a project that you don't believe in. Now, of course, if somebody wanted to buy a typewriter repair business, you might talk them out of that one.
I wouldn't be involved in it.
Well, tell us how you got the PhD after Siegel.
Well, my PhD is in metallurgy and material science, and I truly was a rocket scientist. I worked for McDonnell Douglas and then a smaller high-tech company, and I worked on things like the very early stage space shuttle, the space station, manufacturing in space, weaponry I can't talk about.
I know.
My brother called me up with an opportunity. I was leaving my job, and I was living in New England, and I'd just gotten a job offer back in New York, where I'm originally from, and he had an opportunity to buy some Dunkin' Donuts with no money down, which is how much money me and he had since we were two boys from Brooklyn. pretty young yet, wound up moving from high tech into the donut business. And actually, a friend of mine said that I went from missiles to munchkins.
Yeah. Bernie, I had a uncle who was with McDonnell Douglas.
Uh-huh.
He could never talk about what he did. Everything was top secret.
My first day on the job, my boss is walking me through an area, and he says, I cannot explain, you know, the systems that they're working on because you haven't gotten your clearance yet, but here's a copy of Scientific America. It talks all about it. strange. All right.
Well, tell me, how has COVID affected the business resales?
Well, first, obviously, it's affected different businesses in different ways.
Yes.
We just closed yesterday on the sale of a transaction that, you know, it was in a major mall. And the mall was closed for, I think, from early March into the end of May. That didn't bode well with his income and expense statement. And nor did people flock back to the malls as soon as they reopened either. It was gradual. So obviously some businesses were hurt. Others, by the way, were very positively affected. For example, I spoke to two women that own a gun shop. March of 2020 was up till that time the best month they'd ever had in business.
I'm sure.
Gun sales went through the roof.
Right.
Commercial cleaning companies were getting calls from all kinds of companies to do much more thorough, cleaning more often, deeper cleaning. So some businesses were helped, you know, by COVID. Others, obviously, like in the quick service food business, just getting people became difficult, even when they were able to reopen. And that remains today. So COVID obviously has affected different businesses in different ways. That said, activity is actually pretty strong. There are sellers out there who, maybe having gone through this now, say, you know, I've gone through four recessions in my business lifetime, and now COVID, I'm toast, I'm ready.
You know?
So you're getting sellers. And of course, buyers, the whole way that we live, our society has changed. People no longer go to the office. They work from home. They're working, and boom, they take a break, you know, to feed the baby. It's a different world. And COVID has made it so that there are more buyers, I think, out there right now. And the really good news is lending is strong for businesses that qualify.
Bernie, how do you prepare someone who wants to sell their business to be patient?
Well, first of all, I try to give them the realities of the world. Actually, let me back up. The first thing I try to do with any potential seller is develop a relationship with them. I want them to understand that if they engage me, I'm committed to their best interest, and I want to help them get the best possible result for their goals. Not every seller has the same goals. Not every seller is, oh, I want the highest price. There may be other issues. I have family in the business that I want to, they want to keep their job, or the name on the business. I want that name there, or I don't want my family name on the business afterwards.
Right.
So, you know, so there are many issues. And so the first thing I do in preparing them is really try to develop a relationship with. And that's one of the things I hate about technology. I embrace technology. In my business, you have to use it, and I do. But what it's eliminated is the normal routine of meeting people face to face.
Right.
Getting to know you, you getting to know them, getting a comfort level between the two of you. And that's one of the things that technology has made more difficult to do. And I make as strong an effort as I can to be able to meet people. But if the client is under 50, all they want is, you know, to email and text, and they really don't want to meet and hit issues face-to-face and talk about them.
So, well, anyway, Bernie, I got to compliment. We only have a few minutes left. I got to compliment you. This is Bernie's first show. And I got to tell you, I'm not going to get into the particulars, but since day one, Bernie and I got together, he has done everything right. And hearing his first show, it is so easy to understand. I mean, he's almost like a professor that you don't even have to take notes. You understand. And this is going to be a incredibly great show. I can already tell, Bernie, you have done such a great job today. And I don't say that very often, believe me, but I'm very impressed that we could go on for a whole nother 30 minutes.
Oh yeah.
I actually have three people that, and I'll check and see if I need to give them your phone number, that have called up. First of all, give everybody your phone number and your website address.
Sure. It's 610-668-9780. And the web for Murphy is www.murphybusiness.com.
And, you know, remember something about Murphy. They're all over the world. And, you know, Bernie has access to other cities, other states, of what's going on. And we'll talk. Bernie's going to be back again with us next month. But Bernie, I can't thank you enough. What a great, great job you did today. First show. And we will be back with you next week with more Ask the Experts. Thank you so much, Bernie Siegel with Murphy Business Sales. We'll see you all next week. Thank you so much for tuning in.
You've been listening to the Ask the Expert Show, sponsored by the Cardamone Law Firm for Injured Workers. Join us every Tuesday at 10 for Philadelphia's finest experts in the legal, health, financial, and home improvement fields.
Murphy Business is one of the largest and most successful business brokerage firms in North America. The King of Prussia, Pennsylvania office is one of more than 180 offices across the United States and Canada. The experienced business brokers at Murphy Business Philadelphia have extensive business experience across most types of businesses. Their firsthand experience helps to provide professional assistance whether you're looking for commercial real estate, a franchise opportunity, assistance with mergers and acquisitions, or a comprehensive business valuation. Murphy Business professionals offer assistance with all of your business brokerage needs. Bernie Siegel believes that when you're looking for and selecting a business broker, you select a broker with integrity, which can develop the kind of quality network who will seriously review opportunities he or she represents. Bernie Siegel has integrity and accepts engagements only if the expectations of the seller are within the scope of the market. The business brokers at Murphy Business Brokers have the skills and tools needed to analyze, package, market, finance, and close a transaction. This means embracing technology where it can facilitate the process, but also appreciate the tools of face-to-face negotiations and relationship building. Bernie and his staff are able to transmit to prospective buyers his strong belief in the project that he is representing, as he only accepts projects he can be enthusiastic about. His 38 years plus in the profession are marked with appreciation from his clients and recognition of his prowess by his peers. Call them today at 610-668-9780. That's 610-668-9780.